Welcome to Tech Insights from InfoTech Research Group, the podcast where a group of experts cut through all the noise and focus on what really matters for technology leaders. I'm thinking back to 2019 when I went to Texas for Zoho Analyst Day. The CEO came out on stage, and I realized this was a company unlike other software companies that I'm used to covering here in North America. They're based in India, and the CEO was talking about not only their main corporate office there in a major city of India, but he was talking about how they have satellite offices in rural areas. And a lot of farmers that work at Zoho as well. And he was showing lovely pictures of the types of fruits and vegetables they were growing. It was some amazing stuff. And he talked about how in these rural settings, they even had remote workers who would come to the office sometimes, work at home sometimes, and were really set up for a very flexible work style. So today, joining me on Tech Insights, we have Zoho's Chief Strategy Officer, Vijay Sundaram. Welcome, Vijay.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Brian. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, and I remember your presentation at the Zoho Analyst Day too, Vijay. So I'm excited to get you again for this time. And we want to talk about Zoho's approach to work and how the pandemic affected it. But I think we should start with the human element here, because I want to understand, with Zoho's base of operations in India and having some offices in rural areas as well, I want to hear about how your people have been affected during this time. And if you want to share with me what your experience with that was.
Thanks for asking, Brian. When we last met, that was in 2019, right? Before we all saw how the world had changed for us.
I call it the before times.
Yeah, like the before times. And to our credit, in some sense, we were going in certain directions in how we built the company and ran our operations that actually helped us during the pandemic. But before I get to that, it'd be useful to talk first about the human aspect of it. You know, as you mentioned, we're headquartered in India. India was severely affected by the pandemic across a set of surges over the last year and a half. We have 10,000 employees in India. And when we started overnight, we had to shut these offices down, right? People had to physically relocate. They were in the cities. The cities had completely shut down. Many of the people and our employees had come from rural areas. All of a sudden, they had to move. So Zoho was in the process of not just figuring out what to do with our facilities, but how to help employees get back with their families, move back where they needed to go, arrange for things like transportation, arrange for things like communication, because everything started to break down, right? So a big part of that was first being an agent of assistance, an agent of help, and then worrying about work and what we needed to do. So that was the first mindset that we had to create. Unfortunately, we saw several surges of the pandemic. So people moved home, a lot of personal tragedies, a lot of mental anguish. So we even had to set up counseling services within the company so that people can have someone to talk with. Traumatic experiences for many people, personal families. I personally know a number of people I work with who are personally impacted, either direct families, immediate families, or even one step removed. So that was the first part of it, getting people situated. And then it was once things started to settle down, people are working remotely, and now you have other issues, right? People had many cases, employees had to give up apartments that they were in because they were no longer in the cities. They had to go back to where they came from, had to find housing all over again. In some cases, maybe had to go back and live with the family. And Zoho as a company has also served in some ways as a community for its employees. And you'd see that if you come walk into one of our offices, you know, there are people talking around, doing stuff, engaging themselves. Sometimes people bring their families in our office in Chennai. We have a school next door. You know, employees send their kids to that school. So it's a very communal setup. You know, people are in the walkways, people are sitting and outdoors under trees, drinking coffee, whatever. So that sense of community was lost. You know, and that's probably the most lasting effect for many of the employees, is they tend to be young. Their social circles are constructed from work. Even their peer models, you know, people they want to emulate, who they want to look at, who they want to learn from, all that is derived from work. They're still in their 20s, most of these folks. And so that was lost. And so a lot of what we have to do is try and recreate that or live with the limitations of that social context that work used to provide for employees. So that was the big part of the human side when we first started.
I think you summarized that really well, and sort of highlighting that the first focus during this disruptive time had to be on your people and just checking in to make sure that they were okay, first of all. And then somehow through it all, you have to keep your business running and you have to enable your people to work and do their jobs, even though they might not be able to come to the office and their reality has changed quite drastically, very quickly. So with that in mind, let's talk about your operating model that you see for Zoho, and what does that look like going forward?
Yeah. The first aspect, as you mentioned, was taking care of folks. You know, this is the time to show, if you proclaim yourself as an employee-centric company, this is the time to show it, right? So that's what we had to do first, prove it when it mattered. And once you got past that, you know, people, work is redeeming, right? Because you are in the middle of something like this, and work gives you a sense of meaning and purpose. So it was important for us to create back the ability for people to come back and to continue to work from where they were. So a lot of the arrangements we had to do had everything, a lot of infrastructure investment, figuring out bandwidth. You know, we're sending people to areas that might be rural or semi-rural, equipment, redundancy. At the simplest level, extra cell phones. So you have bandwidth that hangs on the phone, you know, so you basically create redundancy in the system because these people are still serving customers. They're still held often to the same standards, maybe a respite for a few weeks, but you're still held to the same standard. You're still held to the same commitments. So I think getting them the right equipment they need, the right infrastructure, the support systems, the teams that can help them troubleshoot issues if they came up, that was all a big part of it. And going forward, I think, is where you're headed. How do you see this model for us going forward? You know, today where we are is many people have partially returned to these offices. We don't mandate it in our offices in India. We have actually, by the week, we see increasing participation in the office. We still manage it with social distancing. It's still optional for people, but people choose to come back because, you know, it's a sense of balance for folks too. I talked about the communal aspect of it, the friends, you know, people look to their workplace to have that camaraderie as well. So that's part of it too. So we've opened up our offices. They're optional, but we have a lot of people still working remotely, and we see this model going into some sort of an indefinite future. CEB, and I think it's not just Zoho. If you take any business like ours that is not mandated on a physical presence for their work, for example, retail or restaurant services or hospitality, then you're always going to have this. You're able to do a certain amount, you're able to do a big chunk of your work from away. So there is going to be pressure to accommodate those models. It also helps the organization to handle that in case there's another resurgence. If there's anything we've seen from this pandemic, is the unpredictability of it. You know, countries that you thought had already conquered it came back again. And you've seen Israel, you've seen New Zealand and others. So we have no idea where this would yet go. So you still have to maintain that level of flexibility rather than come up with mandates that it needs to work in a certain way going forward, because we don't know how things are going to fall out. So we just have to be prepared to handle it. So today we have a model where people can come back or not. And the issue of how we make that work is not too much of a troubling issue for us, because that's has been our operating model for a good long time. And we've worked across the world in multiple geographies. We've had people who had flexibility to work away from the office as well. And we built all these tools and collaborative systems for literally over a decade now that's allowed us to work in ways that don't require us to be in the same room or the same office or even at the same time. So all of these tools that we built naturally lent themselves to what we did. And it wasn't a big change of mindset for us or a different way of working. It was applying these tools, and we enhanced a lot of them. And I can talk about some of that if it makes sense.
Yeah, we'll get into that. You're describing, obviously, that you're a software company, that your work doesn't really require that you all be in the same place at the same time. And it's interesting because you're in this situation where Zoho is so often making the tools that will help other companies collaborate and maintain some sort of productivity throughout this disruptive time when you're shifting between remote work, thinking that it's over, coming back to the office. Nope, go back home. It's not over yet. So I think we're seeing those waves of the pandemic take effect and disrupt things even further. And what I'm curious to hear about, because I know Zoho drinks its own champagne. In fact, we're on Zoho meeting right now. And relies on its own suite of software to work. So what did you learn from doing that during the past year and a half? And how did that influence some of your products?
Mm-hmm. Hey, that's a great question. Like I said, we had a number of products that we've been using for a good long time. So think of products in the area, I'll put them in two or three buckets. You have products that allow for collaborative productivity. You think of Office Suite is a good example, right? Our Office Suite's always been on the cloud. It's always been collaborative, and that's how it's been. So you continue, you're working on a project, you're working on a marketing plan, or you're working on a PR release. It's always been collaborative. So those are one set of tools that we had online. Another one is communication. Right here, we're using Zoho Meeting, and this is one of the video communication tools we have. We also have things that have chat-based communications that is used really probably the most at Zoho and completely ubiquitous. Almost everybody has that. You can even make calls from there, video calls from there. It's like when you're trying to get your work done, you just want to talk to someone real quick, you send out a chat. And if that becomes cumbersome, you can convert that into a call and then go back into the chat. You can save your transcripts, all those kinds of things, right? So we have all those are the communication tools. And then you have the planning tools, which are things like project management and things of that ilk, where you're actually planning activities. And that was something that came more into the fore during this pandemic, because now you had to, your coordination across common goals and targets needed to be accomplished through some sort of software that could facilitate that. So we found that we were using, we have something called Zoho Projects, and we also have something called Zoho Sprints, which is a lightweight version of Zoho projects. So that was something we increasingly started using even within our teams to make sure that people don't have to communicate to know where they stand. It's all automatically reflected in the system, and you can get it on demand as opposed to going in and asking for it, right?
Yeah, the way I see it there, and sorry to Vijay, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I just want to comment on what you're saying there. To me, you're talking about the balance between synchronous communication and asynchronous communication. Like there's a need for both, and both play their role. And sometimes you don't always want to have a video meeting with somebody, but you also want to know what was the last thing they did and where do I need to pick up the ball?
Exactly. You put it beautifully. In fact, I would go an extra step and point this out. You know, when you talk about automation, we have to be careful about what we're automating. Do we want to automate waste, as an example, right? So let's say you have a company that's accustomed to having tons of meetings. So, and if their mode in the new world is to actually just convert all that online, what are you going to do? You're going to wind up with fatigue and disenchantment because people are going to be online all the time. There's 16 people in these meetings. Only three are ever going to be talking. All the stuff that is part of the company culture and way of working. If you just translate that and make that online, you're going to make everybody miserable. So in some ways, you've got to rethink your methods itself. before you think of the automation part of it, like meetings. You brought up a good example. Are meetings always needed? Does communication always have to be synchronous? That's a good example of those chat kind of tools. You work something out, you make some inquiries, give some people some time to think about it, come back, and maybe there's no meeting at all because the issue got resolved or the problem got solved, right? And so it prevented the meeting altogether. We've always believed in, as part of our own corporate culture, obviously we don't advocate this to our customers necessarily, but we don't have, for a company our size, we have very few meetings. We spend much less time in meetings than most companies. So when we need them and we absolutely need to have them, sure, we have the tools like this one. Most of the times we try to avoid them through asynchronous communication, through tools that can allow you to engage from a distance quickly that are non-interventional. You know, it gives you a few minutes to get in, get something, get out, and work on something else, as opposed to get locked in a meeting and checking if the communication works and having the greeting protocol and all of those kinds of things that just adds up to people's day and time. So in terms of how this actually impacted some of our products, we realized that a couple of products that were kind of new or in the on the drawing boards came to the fore. One of them was Zoho Lens. And this was a product we use for remote assistance. When people can't travel, you can basically go in and see what they're doing. We also have a product called Zoho Assist. Both of these were products that allowed remote assistance. You know, when, for example, think of a call center rep, can look into something, watch your screen, and help understand your issues. So some of those remote type of tools became much more prevalent now, because that's something that was clearly not possible.
Okay, so this is like a customer, really about the digital customer experience, where somebody might call into a call center and say, hey, I'm trying to check out my cart, I can't figure out the payments, what do I do here? And then you can use one of these solutions to basically do like virtual desktop or remote desktop assistance with them.
Yes. And it's tied to a ticketing system and everything else. So it doesn't sit in isolation. So you can basically run that into the ticketing system, the response system, the support system, all of that, right? So it's integrated with all of that.
I see. So it not only does it solve the problem, but it connects to a wider workflow so that it's tracked and everybody is clear on what the interaction was.
Yes, exactly. As opposed to like a Zoom call, which stands on its own, right? It's not connected to anything. After that, whatever actions you need to take, there's no project management tool that sits at the back and tracks it or anything like that, right? So it's purely a meeting tool. In the business context, a lot of these interaction tools are better implemented and better adopted if they can be connected into the underlying workflow. And that's sort of what we try to do with a lot of our products.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense to me. And hearing you talk about how you can have to connect that collaboration right into the workflow, I think is what's really key to facilitate this hybrid operating model. And, you know, I'm just curious to hear from you. I imagine that you're in this situation. You say that some of your offices have started to open up and people have started to go back a little bit more. I don't know if you've done that yet, but in either case, just tell me a bit about what you find are the pros and cons of this new hybrid operating model we're in.
The first aspect of it, of course, is flexibility, right? And especially in cases when the employees need them. I talked a few minutes ago about personal tragedies. And when you have something like that, you need fundamental flexibility. So this model provides for that. In fact, that's one of the things that employees look for at this time. That's what we've learned. Can the organization be flexible? That's the first thing. The second thing is, is the organization itself resilient? You know, so this is the test of organizational resilience, right? It's not about how big your company is. It's about the practices you have, the culture you have, the ability to keep your employees at this point in time. That's resilience. It's nothing to do with size. We've seen in the financial shocks of the last 10 or 15 years, how the largest companies have fallen like a pack of cards when something relatively small happens, because there's no institutional resilience to long-term, to big changes in the environment. So this was a big test of that. And for us to keep employees engaged, you know, you had to find some proxies for things that people got from work. You know, how do you create groups where people can talk outside of work or engage in ways? What's the equivalent of the water cooler now? What's the equivalent of intrinsic knowledge that comes in because you're in the organization, you talk to people, you walk around, you mingle with your peers, and you watch, you learn by watching? That's lost, right? How do you do that? What can you do that? Can you start some informal groups? Can you start mentor groups and peers who can fit that and cut across organizational hierarchy? So those are some of the things that we've been playing around inside.
Do you think there's a digital solution to that, what you're talking about, that getting around the water cooler, having that sort of culture of being together in the office? Can we replicate that if we're not in the office digitally?
Yeah, that's the challenge, right? So some of it happens informally. The organization doesn't have to get into it. You just create the tools and it happens. We have this tool called Click, which is a chat-based tool, right? People use it for all kinds of things outside of work. They form groups even with external parties. And so that's, the tool is there and you leave it for people to figure out how to use it. So people form little cohorts to handle things. Someone has some interest in music. All of a sudden you see people with that kind of interest working in a little group and finding things to do outside of work. So sometimes it's just providing the tools. The second thing is to provide the flexibility. I mean, you this is a time for organizations to basically employ trust. It's all about trust. You know, you have people working remotely. You don't know exactly what they do, when they check in, or what they are. What kind of an organization are you? Do you need to have tools that monitor that? Do you treat with it the same way? Like when people walk into your office or check in at a certain point in the time in the physical office, are you trying to replicate that in an online office? You know, in our view, that would be a completely bad practice. The whole point of this thing was to give people flexibility to be able to come in when they want, take some time off the middle of the day because maybe they're living with a parent now or whatever, or they have young children that need coming back from school at 3 p.m. and so on. So you've have to create that fundamental flexibility for people to be able to work and not have the same expectations. And all this comes expectations, not, you do have expectations of outcome, but not expectations of when they come in or what they do. That has to be built on a fundamental notion of trust, and that is two-way.
Right. Measure the output, not the input. Okay. Let's shift the conversation now to detailing some of your product strategy. We have the chief strategy officer here, so I have to ask a few questions in this area as well. And my mind takes me back to when Zoho launched Remotely, which was a package of apps that was designed for the early days of the pandemic, and it remains as a software package. And in fact, at first, it was free to use. So you were encouraging people to adopt it and pick it up if they needed that quick solution to work remotely from home after being disrupted. So I'd just like to hear an update here. Tell me about the usage of Zoho Remotely. And did people use it only when it was free? Did they keep using it? Did the usage pattern shift? Tell me all about it.
Yeah, just as a quick summary, Remotely includes an office suite, and which is your spreadsheet, word processor, all that. It includes storage, which is a cloud drive. And it includes communication tools like the chat tools and meeting, and finally tools for remote work, like I mentioned, Lens, Assist, and even a live project management. So it's beyond just productivity and communication. It's all of these things that I just mentioned. When we launched it in second quarter of last year, you know, just when the pandemic hit, we had a lot of these products already. We put it together in a package and made it free for customers. We made it free, I think, for the first 6 months, and then our first 3 months, and then took it all the way to the end of the year. So it was 9 months. And even in the first 6 months, we had more than 35,000 companies that signed up. And honestly, it many of them came from countries that the top countries there, I believe, were India, the United States, and Mexico were the biggest countries where we saw that uptake. And the communication and remote work tools were the ones that were most widely used even within the suite. So things like our Click, which is the chat and messaging platform, Showtime, which is conferencing and the ability to do a little bit more than just conferencing, add things like reviews and surveys and stuff and presentations into this format. So that was another tool. And then, of course, remote tools like Assistant Lens. We made it free till the end of the year, and then we started pricing it. And people, most people are happy to accept it. There were a lot of people who basically took on the product. What we saw that was more interesting was people stepped up to other suites in Zoho that included business process apps. So we had the ones that we had people step up to a CRM suite, which included, or a suite that included these tools. The most obvious one was what we call the Zoho Workplace, which includes all of these tools and a few others, but it's mostly in the area of productivity and collaboration. So that was the obvious one. We saw a year-to-year jump of about 45% on that. And then we saw that the other one was Zoho One, which is a compendium of everything that Zoho does. And many people sprung from remotely to go to Zoho One, which was all of the business tools required to run their business. And I'm not going to put a finger on exactly how many did that, but we did see a year-to-year growth of about 65% on just the Zoho One uptick as a consequence of people moving from that. So yeah, so that the conversion was mostly into other suites, and we saw people across all verticals. I don't think we could really segment across that in a very meaningful way.
Okay, that makes sense to me. And it's interesting that you're talking about how once those people that were adopting the remotely package, perhaps that was an introduction to Zoho, and then they started moving up to those other more systematic tools. That's the beauty of a platform strategy, right? Is that once you get a foothold with customers, they often find more purpose and use for you. And that lines up with what I understand about how customers often will grow their relationships with software companies once they find out that they're reliable and effective in some areas. So I just want to put forward a couple of problems that companies might be facing right now to you. And then if you can sort of tell me what would you say to a customer in this situation? What advice would you give them? So if I'm going back to an office situation where people will not sit at their own desks, but are going to be hot desking. So they can come in, grab any desk available and start working, plug in their laptop. Does Zoho have any solutions that assist that?
It's not a problem that we personally face. It's not an issue that we personally face because we own all our properties. So we still have people who can come in anytime and use our stuff. I think a big aspect of this is really when all your stuff is on the cloud, this is almost, it almost becomes a non-issue. You just come plug in, because we do it at our offices too when people visit. You know, people come in, they just sit on whosoever desk is not there that day, and it all just works, right? You just plug it in and you've got to your corporate network. So all you need is a Wi-Fi connection. So in most cases, the fact that everything we do is on the cloud, I mean, all of us use our machines basically as cloud accessory tools. There's almost nothing that happens on the local desktop. So that is the biggest way that we create that flexibility. And of course, that is also on every one of our apps also has a mobile component. And that's, by the way, I should point out, is one of the things that really picked up in terms of both what we put into the space in terms of usability, bringing the important things to the fore of the particular apps. If you're on CRM, the most important things come up on the surface and you get to it with the least number of clicks. So that drove a certain kind of productivity and user experience in mobile apps. And that's a big thing, because now we have mobile apps that people can use to do most of their work. So that's a great solution for people, even whether it's hot desking or not. In fact, I found myself using several of our mobile apps almost exclusively now, like expense management is one example of something that it's that I use almost exclusively online, or even we have an online signature tool, like some of the other vendors in the marketplace. And that is something that I use almost exclusively online. And it makes sense because I have 15 minutes here to approve a few documents. I don't need to be in front of my computer. I could be anywhere. And it allows me to get it. And the tool has a UI that's actually even better than the online UI, than the desktop UI. So it's just easier to use online. So I think the migration for people is everything's on the cloud. and it's easily movable between the desktop and the mobile. And that just brings in a lot of flexibility for people to come in anywhere and resume where they left off.
Right. It's an interesting way to look at it. The cloud makes our products available anywhere at any time. So if you're hot desking, it's really not that much different a scenario than if you're working at home. What about for people that are having meetings between people in the office? So imagine maybe a boardroom full of people, and they're meeting with some people that are working from home remotely. That can be an awkward experience. How do you approach that, or how do you think you can make that a better experience?
Frankly, we haven't seen many of that ourselves today because we're still limited in how much people have come back into the office. And in many cases, what happens is people get into the online meetings anyway, even if they're in the same setting, or even if they're the same physical location, because they may not be in the same building, or they may be in three floors down. And so when we have this, you automatically have the system that handles it, and it makes it all, it democratizes that. You know, the people in the room don't have an extra voice or anything like that. So in this case, that's the model that we usually have used, is people just get into meetings wherever they are. In an office room meeting, trying to bring somebody who's remote into that can always be clumsy because you're dealing with the noise, you're dealing with the size, you're dealing with proximity, and people often have side conversations. So I think it's more of a behavioral discipline rather than technology to do that. You almost have to take turns to allow the person online to actually be able to talk, because they can easily be talked over. And then you need to avoid these side conversations or doing other things in the physical meeting when this is going on. So I think it's more a discipline of how you conduct yourself rather than technology in a situation like that.
Yeah, I think so too. Unfortunately, from my observations, people need a lot more discipline to conduct meetings appropriately and in a fair way, so everyone really is on an equal footing. So it's been awkward so far, and maybe we're still learning how to do it. Okay, well, we've covered a lot here, Vijay. So I'll just ask you one more question to see if you have any other creative solutions for how companies can navigate this hybrid operating model time and this time of uncertainty where our way of working might be shifting even from week to week.
Yeah, I would go back to a few points that we discussed. It actually starts from a position of, it's a behavioral question, really. It starts from how employees view their companies. Do they see them as the trust is a big part of it? So if you're going to work in this model, there needs to be fundamental trust between both parties. The company trusts the employees and vice versa. The employees know that the company is going to tell them what's going on and keep them informed of things. So that's one big part of it. There's the notion of, in this kind of a world, flexibility. We talked about that. So there are going to be people who will come in and then won't be able to come in. Regulations change. So you have to actually change the way you did work. So fundamental operational flexibility in what you do has to be part of it. Tools is another aspect of it. You just you make tools ubiquitous and available. This is actually the philosophy of why we even introduced something like Zoho 1, 2, 3 years ago, because you just put that on everybody's desktop and people find the right tools to solve that problem. So somebody who you would have thought would pick up a survey tool and decide to use it to work with either internally or with somebody they interface with outside the company. So when you federate these tools, it creates ways for people to be able to work in this kind of an environment where they can connect and engage in ways that earlier used to be formalized through physical meetings. So these tools are not just communication tools, it could be surveying tools, project management tools, all those kinds of things. So that's another aspect of it. And the last part of it is you know, when at this time, employee centricity is something what the pandemic has taught us. People have always talked about customer centricity for a good long time, right? What the pandemic required was employee centricity, you know, where companies could hold people in and not resort to the government or somebody else to keep people in place. This, if you've built up your reserves, if you've built up a business that's resilient and has a long-term vision, this is the time to show that. And this is the time for people to know that they have somebody to count on, and it goes beyond the job. So it goes beyond just work, it goes beyond what you can extend to their families. After all, you have the institutional power and resources that individuals don't, and this is the time to spread it.
I like that, employee centricity. I'll be telling my bosses that they need to really focus on employee centricity, and that must mean that the employee is always right. Well, Vijay, thank you again for joining us on Tech Insights. I've really appreciated your time and your contributions today.
Hey, Brian. Wish you the best.
And if you're a listener of Tech Insights, remember to subscribe, or else you'll miss all the future great episodes as we explore tech trends for 2022. I'm Brian Jackson.